I'd like to call to order the Monday, December 14th Health Commission meeting. Welcome. I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes from our November 9th meeting. I have a first and a second. Any dissension on that? Okay, the minutes are approved as Jean prepared them. Thank you. Now it's time for public comment for those persons desiring to speak on issues that are not on our scheduled agenda this evening. Nope, you're it, David.
I'll try to elbow my way to the front of the line here. My name is David Broadwater, and I wanted to draw your attention to a letter that Jean was nice enough. I made a brief one-page on sewage sludge land application for you tonight. And do you have one, David? Okay. I just wanted to give you a heads up. The Planning Commission has been holding hearings for months now on a bunch of different sections of the conservation and open space element, which has been split off from the ag and open space element. And in Chapter 7 Policy OS 2.4, the recommended language now by the planning, unanimously by the Planning Commission, reads that land application of sewage sludge on open space lands in the county, which is about 231,000 acres of land in the county out of a total of 2.2 million roughly, the land application of sewage sludge on open space lands should not be allowed. Now, that's a different issue than what the county is proposing in its proposed ordinances, which is applying it to ag zone land used for growing food and feed. So that's a debate for another time. But I just wanted to give you a heads up that this coming Thursday, and it's too late for the commission, of course, to act as a body, but individuals can act on their own if they so desire. This coming Thursday, the only agenda item that's on there as a hearing is the Conservation Open Space Element's final meeting of the Planning Commission on this matter. And wanted to give you a heads up that after that happens, of course, then it's going to go to the Board of Supervisors, and they will have the final say. And according to the Planning Department, that will occur early next year. I don't know whether that means January, February, what, but early next year. So if your commission would like to have the opportunity to advise the Board of Supervisors on that, you might want to considering that among some of your prospective future items so that you have the chance to comment to them. In addition, the ordinances that have been circulated by the Environmental Health Division of the Public Health Department not only regulate bulk sewage sludge, but also any composts that contain sewage sludge in them in bulk form. I'm not talking about the bag stuff you buy at a nursery that might have sewage sludge in it. And so that would, as my letter here suggests, would be a good idea to have the language changed to not just include sewage sludge, but composted sewage sludge as well. I think this is the commission made the right decision on doing this, and it's not really a change in policy, actually, because the Environmental Health Division, I've spoken both with Kurt Batson and Rich Lichtenfels, who you folks are familiar with, just recently and over the months, and they never intend to put sewage sludge on open space lands. The way they looked at that as waste disposal, the way that they would go about applying it to ag lands, it would require a nutrient management system where you would calculate the nitrogen needs of the crop compared to what's in the soil already, what's in the soil amendment you're adding, and then do a baseline study of the heavy metal contaminants that are in the soil already, so you have the ability to monitor heavy metal buildup in the soil. That kind of agronomic rate is the calculation that's used to do a nutrient management system is not possible on open space lands because you just don't have the management systems in place to ensure that kind of care. So that's considered by the county as to be waste disposal. So those are the basic reasons to be consistent with emerging county policy that the Planning Commission voted to include this language, which is in bold on here, on the letter I provided to you. I'd be happy to answer any questions if anybody has any.
I do, David. By way of clarification, what the Planning Commission is recommending at this point in time is what is bolded. The county should not prohibit disposal of biosolids on open space land. And
I think you said the county should not prohibit. I think I heard you put a...
Should prohibit,
yes,
sorry.
Yes.
Should prohibit disposal of biosolids on open space land.
Right.
That's how it stands now, and you're asking for it to read prohibit disposal of biosolids and composted biosolids?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Have you presented that to them, or is that something you're going to do on Thursday?
I'm going to do that again on Thursday. I presented it to them already. Somehow it didn't make it into the final language, so I'm hoping that that adjustment can be made.
Any other questions for David? Thank you very much.
And thanks for the commission's past interest on this.
It's not past. It's still current.
Yes.
All right, without further ado, Mr. Very Vander Keelan has graced us this evening to talk about nonprofits. Thank you, Barry.
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, thank you very much for the invitation to be here this evening. In the next few minutes, I hope to give you an overview of the nonprofit community in San Luis Obispo County, some of the challenges it's facing, and looking into our unfocused but still a crystal ball of when things might get better. And so before you, I have a slideshow and a few things of interest. First of all, I want to say I'm humbled to think that I'm representing the entire nonprofit community. I think that's impossible for one person to do, but I take ownership for any mistakes that I might make in these next few minutes, and please don't blame the entire community for that. In San Luis Obispo County, there are currently, well, as of October, slightly more than 1,100 501c3 organizations. Now, in the nonprofit world, in the IRS code, there's a provision for about 29 different types of nonprofits, and it's the 501c section of the code that allows for those. So there's a 501c8, 501c2, etc. The 501c3s are the only nonprofits that can receive donations in exchange or in return offer charitable benefits to the donor. So it's, I think, the most important thing for us to think about or to focus on are those 501c3 organizations. So for instance, I'm a member of the Rotary Club, the Monday Noon Rotary Club. That is not a 501c3 organization. It's a membership organization. It collects dues and it has charitable good works that has a separate 501c3. But the club itself is not, I do not receive a tax benefit for paying my membership dues. So in San Luis Obispo County, we had about slightly more than 1,100 organizations that are allowed to receive donations and offer tax benefits to the donor, the 501c3s. Of slightly fewer than half, 43% of those organizations had annual revenue less than $25,000. So we have a large number of small groups of people that have banded together with great passion to address some issue in the community. And that's the beauty of this country and our laws, is it allows people to affiliate with whomever they want to address some issue of common interest. And then there are financial incentives in the tax code for people to financially support that passion. In San Luis Obispo County, we would expect of a large number of small nonprofits because the economy of the county is small business based. And nonprofits in the state of California are incorporated under the Corporations Code. They are corporations. They abide by many of the same rules and laws and regulations that the for-profits do. And so when we think about the small business backbone of the local economy, we should expect that we would have many small nonprofits. The fact that there are so many that have annual revenues less than $25,000 means that there's a lot of people that are doing a lot of good work depending on bake sales and hook and by crook. The total revenue to all nonprofits, now I should say all nonprofits, this is a slight underestimation because these data are from the National Center for Charitable Statistics that regularly updates the statistics for the states and broken down by county. In the most recent report is October of 2009. And those organizations that have annual revenue greater than $25,000 have to file a Form 990, a tax information return, every year. So the National Center for Charitable Statistics aggregates those Form 990 filings and comes up with $389 million in gross revenue generated or received by 501c3 organizations as of October 2009. So those 43% that have revenue less than $25,000 is not included in that $389 million, but you can imagine that the total of that income is not significant when we look at numbers as large as $389 million. I will say that that number, the $389 million, is about 5% less than what was reported on the 990s a year ago. So we are seeing income decreasing, and I would expect that a year from now, if we were to look at the National Center for Charitable Statistics report, we would see even less gross revenue to those to nonprofit organizations in the county because of the trends in funding, which we'll get to in a moment. So much of the funding that's received by nonprofits locally is from within the county. And it has to do with either federal agencies that are based here or pass-through money that comes through the county or through the cities, either from the state or other agencies that pass through. And so it's not an exact a figure of 20% from outside the county because of the transfer mechanisms. But this is the best we can do in terms of tracking where the money comes from. We've seen growth in the last 10 years in the number of 501c3 organizations, the number of nonprofits. We've gone up from 770 or so to about 1,100 today. It's going to be interesting these next 2 years of how many nonprofits will survive. There's some evidence that they are starting to close. Some are going out of business, some are merging. We should be seeing more of that. But we're also seeing the effects of brand new filing registrations that are required by the IRS. About 3 years ago, the IRS required all nonprofits to do an annual filing. If you had revenue greater than $25,000, you were mandated to do the Form 990 filing, but if you didn't have that kind of revenue, if you didn't break that threshold, you didn't have to file anything. Now, every nonprofit has to file a 990 or a simple postcard, the 990N. It's a very simple form, and if an organization that is registered with the IRS does not file that 3 consecutive years, they can have their registration taken away. And so we're going to see some of these smaller organizations that just are so focused on mission and not on administration being delisted by the IRS, and so that's going to come into play too. But we're also seeing the effects of the economy. Independent of the economy, I would expect that we're going to see even more nonprofits being formed. We have a growing number of retired people that have a lot of talent, a lot of energy, and are seeing their pet causes either being addressed inadequately or not being addressed at all, and they will band together and, through collective action, try to address those causes, those issues. So I think 5 years from now, we would expect this line to continue. Again, on a growth chart, it's not the fact that we have too many nonprofits. It's the fact that we need our nonprofits to be more efficient, more effective, and we need to encourage people, when they have an idea about addressing an issue, to partner with an existing agency rather than start their own. And at the Community Foundation, we certainly have been doing that. If somebody can't find a partner, then we will help them incorporate. But we do not do that as a matter of course. We ask them to partner, to find a home somewhere else. For those organizations in the county, now this is by asset size. I want to point out that this is a different metric than what I was saying already about the threshold for filing a Form 990. That was revenue. This is assets. And you can see that, again, we have a large number of small nonprofits in this county. Of those that have assets listed on their Form 990, we see that 282 have net assets less than $100,000. We have 14 that have net assets greater than $5 million. And so included in that 14 is Cal Poly, significant net assets. We also have such organizations as Transitions Mental Health that own and lease property, and Options that owns and lease property. And so while they may not have necessarily have adequate cash flow, they've had to purchase the buildings in order to guarantee housing for their clients, and they show up on this asset, somewhere in this asset chart. When we look at the geographic distribution of nonprofits in the county, this is a very rough estimate from the GuideStar.org website. And we can see that, obviously, the majority, the vast majority, are in city of San Luis Obispo. This is the county seat. This is the center of commerce. One would expect that this would be a natural place to house, to have home offices for a nonprofit. It looks a little bit like a Pac-Man from the old video game. But I don't think that's necessarily the case. Interestingly, the North County has more nonprofits headquartered there than the South County. And I think we're going to expect to see more representation up in the North County as that population continues to grow. Sources of revenue, and I apologize. I am the graphic artist. I am not a graphic artist. This clearly demonstrates that. This chart will show that, it does show that gifts and grants, including government grants, accounts for 42% of the nonprofit revenue, with program revenue, fees for service, accounting for about 39%. Dues, net sales, et cetera, alternative funding streams through dues and through enterprises, is about 11%. Investment income is about 7% when you have large endowments like at Cal Poly that generates significant revenue on most years. And net special events, this is the revenue after expenses for special events, it accounts for less than 5% of all revenue to nonprofits. Those are the things that we read about most in the newspaper, and we're invited to these events all the time, but they're very labor intensive, they're very cost intensive, and the net revenue is relatively small in the grand scheme of things. So if a nonprofit is looking to do an event and looks at it as a way simply to raise money, that's not going to work out in the long run. But if they look at it in its broader context or its broader opportunities of generating constituency, engaging donors, communicating a message, a public relations donor retention donor services function, then the cost-benefit analysis starts to make sense. But on a straight, we're going to do an event to raise money, it just doesn't add up. So if somebody comes along to you and says, boy, what's going to save my organization or what this project really needs is a gala dinner, run as fast as you can, because that's probably not the solution. So the effects of the recession on nonprofits. This is from a recent study released by the Bridgespan Group, which is a national consulting practice of helping nonprofits become efficient and effective. 93% of the charity leaders who were interviewed, and there was about 2,800 people interviewed, 93% of charity leaders report the organizations are in fact feeling the effects of the recession in some form. 80% report a decrease in revenue. 40% say things have been worsening in the last 6 months. Now, this report was released in November, so the data are probably from September or August. We're seeing that in the second half of the year, things have continued to erode for nonprofits. And 58% have report an increase in a request for services, which we would expect. So the pressures are real. There's an increase in requests for services, a decrease in funding. Nonprofits are doing their work somehow, and it's getting pretty close to borderline miraculous of how they're conducting their work. So what will allow nonprofits to recover? Well, government funding needs to stabilize. And in California, the politics of Sacramento need to get figured out. We're looking at another $21 billion deficit in the coming year. Organizations that are dependent on government funding, California state funding, are planning for January mid-year budget cuts. And then another round of cuts come June and July. And this is on top of dramatic cuts last summer. We're cutting very close to the bone. And keep in mind that these are not handouts from the state of California. In fact, these contracts and grants are outsourcing services to the nonprofits. Our legislators, our government agencies, have realized that it is more cost-efficient to outsource those services to nonprofits than to do that work themselves. We're looking at decreased funding in a system that is arguably already efficient. That's not a formula for success in the long term. I really think that in the next year we are going to see a decrease in the number of nonprofit organizations in this county because of the government funding mess. And I don't think I'm understating that or overstating that at all. We have an eroding safety net for the people of the county and for those who serve the people of the county. We have another reason why what we need to see happen before nonprofits can recover is a reduction in unemployment. The economists are saying, beginning in the second quarter of 2010, certainly as we move through 2010, we are going to see jobs, the number of jobs created, picking up. So if we can hang on through at least the first two quarters, then we can start breathing easier. But we're in for some very interesting times for the next 6 months or so, especially if Sacramento continues with the budget stalemates. Nonprofits have responded. Those that have work, have employees, have responded by decreasing the number of employees. So when things recover, there's still going to be a weakened workforce. We already know that there are fewer people trying to serve more people, but when things recover, we're still going to have a weakened workforce. Volunteers are part of the answer. Volunteers are wonderful, but volunteers cost money. At least a third of new volunteers do not repeat their experience because they are so dissatisfied with the way they were treated by the nonprofit organization. They didn't receive adequate training. They didn't receive adequate supervision. The nonprofit staff said, here's a project, go for it, and it's been very dissatisfying. That's a lot of turnover, and it takes money, it takes staff to orient, train, and supervise volunteers. So the reality is volunteers are wonderful, but volunteers cost money. Too many people think volunteers are the answer because they don't realize the costs that are associated with them. And lastly, what we really need to see is consumer confidence rebound in a big way. We can see consumer confidence is closely tied to donations, annual giving. Those annual checks, where many of us are writing our year-end gifts to the nonprofits that we want to support, that's tied to consumer confidence. We are giving up income. Those are out of income. We are saying, in effect, that we don't need to hold on to that income. We can donate it to the nonprofit to help people in the community. And when consumer confidence is down, we're less likely to give up that money. Right now in the United States, consumers are not confident, obviously, of course, as you can see in this tracking chart that goes back about 10 years. We're at a very low point in terms of consumer confidence. People are not sure they're going to have jobs. They're seeing their neighbors struggling to find jobs, and they're paying off their debt. Consumer debt is actually going down, savings rates are going up, while that doesn't necessarily stimulate the economy, it builds a solid personal financial infrastructure for the future. So when consumer confidence returns, we're going to see a return in charitable giving. Major gifts are tied to the stock market, and especially the S&P 500. And those major gifts are transfers of assets. While annual gifts are out of income, major gifts are transfers of assets. And so when people feel wealthy and have confidence that they're not going to have to use those assets, they make those major gifts. And so I expect that we're going to have a bit of a tick up in this month of major gifts to nonprofits because people have highly appreciated securities because the markets reached their bottom in March. There's been 8 or 9 months of good growth. People have have capital gains. I expect that we're going to see a bit of a tick up in major gifts to nonprofits, and we aren't going to see a whole lot. We're going to maybe get through with our annual giving campaigns. So looking ahead to next year, the big thing that we have before us is so many nonprofits don't have adequate operating reserves. They've been eaten into because of the economy. There's a paradox of government contracts in that if you show strong operating reserves, which is a smart business thing to do, the government doesn't give you as much money. So they penalize you for being prudent, which is which is an interesting paradox. So when we look at nonprofits, this is from a study of the Urban Institute of Nonprofits Nationwide going back almost a decade. The most recent survey they did earlier this year showed that 57%, slightly more than half of nonprofits had fewer than 3 months operating reserves or operations in reserves. 28% had no reserves. Nonprofits dependent on government grants tend to have weak reserves because they get penalized for being prudent. And then when we look at what happened in the last big economic shakeup, which was the dot-com bubble burst earlier this decade, 1 in 6 nonprofits that filed a 990 in 2000 did not file a 990 in 2006. Either they shrank such that they didn't have to file, they went out of business, or they merged. So I think that kind of action, I think we're going to see really kicking into high gear in 2010 when the reality of government contracts, which is such a significant portion of health and human services nonprofit work, when those contracts do not materialize or are significantly delayed. So when we look at when we have unemployment, tracking unemployment, when we're tracking consumer confidence, consumer debt, savings rates, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. When will nonprofits recover? Well, if the history is any indication of the future, we can expect nonprofits to hit their stride again in about 2012. We're going to see this is going to be a very difficult year of transition. We're going to see some stabilization near the end of 2010. We're going to see some moderation, some growth in 2011. But we're really not going to hit our stride again until about 2012. That's the kind of horizon that I suggest that we're looking at. So some of this next information may be familiar to you in that each county resident receives at least 6 services from local nonprofits annually, and this is an average number, and it does not include places of worship. So going to church on Sundays does not count. But people take advantage of the services of nonprofits on average about 6 times a year. This is an important part of our local quality of life. And the most recent number that I have, nonprofits generated about $12 million in tax revenue for state and local coffers, and that goes back to 2005. And then a commercial, San Luis Obispo County Community Foundation works to improve the quality of life of all residents of San Luis Obispo County. We do this by making grants and providing support services to nonprofits. We help people give money away strategically, and we build endowments for the future. We were founded in May of 1998. Last year, we granted out, we ended the year with assets of about $22.2 million. So in 1998, our very first gift was $800. a donor, a leader in the community, paid the state of California our incorporation fee. We went from $800 to $22 million in about 11 years. And in the time that we've been in existence, we've made grants totaling slightly more than $14 million. We think we are, in fact, adding value to the quality of life. We have a 15-member board of directors. We have about 3.6 full-time equivalent staff members. Last year, we made 415 grants. That's more than one grant a day, totaling about $2.3 million. We support all nonprofits from the arts to the zoo. And when we have discretionary grants, we focus on building the technical capacity of nonprofits, helping them be more efficient and effective. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have about nonprofits in this county.
Commissioner O'Dell.
Yeah, you disturbed me a little bit about volunteers. It costs money. If you don't have those volunteers, then you have to have staff or you have nothing, and that costs more money, doesn't it? And I think that we should be a more positive thing about volunteers and not to consider that a negative thing.
Well, I apologize if I came across as being negative. I do think that volunteers are wonderful. Volunteers are necessary. The research on why people don't continue their volunteer engagements points to the fact that we need to be real about what it takes to properly engage volunteers. I'm not trying to be negative, I'm trying to be realistic, and I apologize if I came across as being negative.
Mr. Green?
Thank you for the presentation. This is a time of year when people may be thinking about making donations. I know a lot of people are actually foregoing Christmas presents and doing donations. Is there a list of San Luis County 501c3s that someone could go to, and maybe if it's categorized on what they do, that select something to give to? Is there a list somewhere that people could go?
The organization that was keeping that list, but it fell by the wayside with reductions and contraction, was the Hotline 211, and we have not found an organization that will pick that up yet. So the best place to go, in my opinion, is the website www.guidestar.org, and that will list all IRS-certified nonprofits with basic information. You must register to get, you know, the first level of information, but it's a free registration, and in my experience is they do not sell the names, they do not abuse your registration, and you can find out wonderful information about nonprofits in San Luis Obispo County. You can actually search on San Luis Obispo, California, and it will give you all the cities in the county, plus those that have significant operations here but are headquartered outside the county.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Arnold?
Yes, thanks for coming out. I have a few questions, or at least a couple here. You mentioned the state outsourcing work to nonprofits. Could you give me an idea of what the main category would be, like, is it as healthcare services, and what's an example in this county of a nonprofit that's doing work that has been outsourced to them by the state?
Well, so much of getting West. Area. Comprised of sure we're staying. Subprime loan. Because you know, having the out of the water. Cutting. And money in
here.
so in by accountability. Personal. Don't want it. Philanthropic. And I than it
bill issue.
Santa Cruz. Welcome. At the wrong time. Gauge. on South.
Chris. And very much fall. Is receives done recently, Wayne. All that coalition. Public health. And quite as more time. Large. support.
Of side effects.
Concern. Information. There have been many. Seasonal. But for pharmacies. but... latest.
Letter to the said they weren't.
Cal Poly. And so
up or causing cancer.
Send a partial edge.
Project.
Their fund.
Of the grand jury.
So ask